Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello, Pod Squad. Yeah, I know I keep going on about know your breed and breed instincts and things like that. And I can't say it enough that it really, really does make a difference. And that the view that a lot of the general public take of a dog is a dog, they just come in different sizes and shapes, but you can make them into what you want them to be, is just not the case. Especially when it comes to pedigrees. Every pedigree has an original purpose. They were developed not just to look like that, but they were developed for a job. And specifically, I wanted to talk a bit about German Shepherds today. So, of course, some people will still call them Alsatians, and it is the same breed as a German Shepherd. It's just a different name. And it came from when, you know, the Second World War, essentially, when nobody wanted anything to do with German things, like Dachshunds weren't, like, you couldn't talk about Dachshunds because that's a German word. And you couldn't call them German Shepherds because nobody wanted to be, at least in the UK, nobody wanted to be associated with the Germans. Just at that time, that's not against any of the German listeners at all. People would call German Shepherds Alsatians, which is after the area that they are originally developed in, which is Alsatia. So they were Alsatians. But yeah, same breed. Now, the Alsatians or German Shepherds that I grew up with were very, very different to the ones that we see now. The ones that I'm sure many of you as listeners grew up seeing were mainly like guard dogs. They were dogs to be feared. They were dogs that were like scrapyard dogs, guard dogs, like left loose in a compound to scare other people off, and what security guards would use and things like that. And while they do still get used for this purpose, it's not as much. They're more in pet dog homes now as the breed has become more popular. And I say that they used to be something to be feared. That was just like the general consensus. My dad had various German Shepherds, and one of them particularly I was very, very fond of, which I will come on to her in a second. But let's just have a look at the German Shepherd, what its original purpose was. It was originally bred as a herding dog, and it was specifically bred to herd and guard a flock, so sheep. So while a lot of people have the kind of misconception that they are guard dogs, yes, they do have guarding tendencies. They are very herdy, and I'd say they're probably more herdy than guardy. And my personal experience with Shepherds, as, you know, time's gone on, the decades have gone by, is they don't have as much of that guardy edge. They don't have that confidence in themselves. And they're all mouth, no trousers. I say this is a very general thing, and this is more the UK bred ones as a generic rule. Of course, the police and other, you know, organisations do still use German Shepherds. However, they mainly use they use lines from abroad because they still have a lot of that guarding and drive instinct, which works for what they're needed for, to be, you know, dogs to be sent out to be police dogs or whatever it may be. But in general, the UK bred ones, the UK lines, they don't have that confidence anymore. And when I say mouth, no trousers, it's all bark. And quite often, I'm not suggesting you do this, but what I have done in the past is I've kind of gone, you know, almost like, come on then. And they've gone, oh my God, no, can't do that. And they shrink inside themselves, which is not what the original Shepherd was. So when I say fronting up to them, so I'll give you an example, real life example. And I've done this many times over the years. So in my professional dog walking days, I'd have groups of dogs out on lead, you know, pounding the streets to get to the local field or whatever it may be. And there's one particular instance, but I know this wasn't a singular incident, where I had four dogs on lead and there was a shepherd on like a rope or a chain in the owner's front garden, minding its own business, which is fine. You know, I'm not knocking the owners for doing that. And then, but there was no fencing. So that obviously the dog is tied up, but the dog is tied up on quite a long line. And as we get closer, me and the dogs, starts, you know, hackles come up and it stands up and it's looking as though it could launch towards us and potentially reach us with the amount of rope that it's got. So in that situation, what I did was the dogs I was walking were on a dog walking belt. I made my arms very big, as in wide out from my body, I stamped, put my kind of upper half of my body forward. I stamped one of my feet and did a very loud, and because at this point it was barking and lunging and moving forwards towards us. And as soon as I did that, it kind of went, oh my God, you know, and backed off and almost retreated back towards the house rather than towards us. I'm not advising anyone goes out and there and does that, because you could be asking for problems. I'm just talking about my own experiences. And I know that I've done that quite a few times and scared dogs off. Obviously, I'm in charge of other people's dogs. I don't want them to be harmed in any way. And that had the potential to, you know, for me to have that situation. I had to walk that way. I had to get the dogs back from their walk to one of the owner's house and my vehicle, and we got away okay with it. And that's what I mean when I say all mouth no trousers. And I've come across a lot of situations like that, and I've also worked with quite a lot of shepherds in pet homes with owners who may have grown up with a shepherd or just love the look of a shepherd, and have decided to get one as their, say, first dog, and have then struggled not only with the strength but then the behavior of lots of barking and lots of trying to chase things like bikes or cars or, you know, runners, anything that moves, which is that herding instinct. And it's learning how to redirect that onto something that we can control, which may be a ball. I know I mentioned in the last episode about balls on ropes. For a lot of shepherds, that works really well. But again, it's not just blasting them with a ball. And they have more potential for their hips to, you know, have major issues, because that is one of the biggest things with the breed, with health problems. Don't ask me why they've gone like this. I'm sure someone who's listening may be able to tell me of why the temperament has changed so much, why the confidence isn't there. Maybe it's more just pet breeding that has now had the fallout, that they're more likely to bark out of fear than they are out of confidence. And then that's when you get the really loud dogs. Don't know. But that is my view on it, personally. Another side to me, dog walking and experiencing shepherds, was there was one particular dog I used to walk. She was a rescue. She was a lovely long coat, like red, black sable, long coat shepherd. She was called Kira. And she's passed away now, bless her. But she was great. She was fine with other dogs. She was great. You know, the owners had done a cracking job with her. She lived with another dog as well, different breed. And it got to the point where she loved to herd, and she loved to herd other dogs on the walk, but not to a point where it became a problem. And I actually started using her if I was out with a group of dogs that, you know, one of the dogs maybe wasn't that reliable with their recall, or, you know, if they decide they were pretty good, or if they got on a sniff, you'd have to really watch them. If there was ones I wasn't quite 100% with, obviously, if for the most part, they wouldn't be off lead unless they're in a secure area. However, if I had Kira with me on that particular walk, she would herd them. She would keep the group together, and that made my life a lot easier. Another kind of fallout, what you can get with shepherds with groups of dogs, or at least dog interactions, if they're off lead and they're good with other dogs, what you may start to get is that neck pecking with the dog. And Kira, I used to have to watch Kira for this, that they, if they're herding and the dog or the thing that they're herding hasn't stopped or moved in the direction that they are requesting, then they may get a kind of neck peck. So that might be just with their muzzle, or that may be with an open mouth. It doesn't tend to be with pressure, like as in closing jaws around a neck. But it's all things that kind of go back to their ancestry of what they were originally bred for. It can look quite nasty. And of course, if another dog turns around and says, "Oi, stop being rude," then you could end up with a scrap. So it's definitely something to watch for. However, it is pretty common within the breed. There are, you know, it's becoming more popular, unfortunately, for people to get Belgian Shepherds or Malinois. There's different types of Belgian Shepherds, so I'm specifically talking about Malinois, or as someone once said to me, a Malinois. I call them Maligators, and I know I've had guests on before that have got Maligators, and I love them. I've worked with them. I could not have one because they are a full-time job. They are insane with their drive and their work ethic, and they need constant, let's train, let's move. So it's like the old school German Shepherd, but turned up about 20 notches. Not a breed for me, not a breed for a general pet dog home. Unfortunately, I have seen them in pet homes and it doesn't tend to end well. I'm sure there are some success stories, but usually with the success stories comes the owners having a total life change, or they end up becoming a dog trainer as a result of it because they are that challenging. But German Shepherds, I'd say as a pet dog and especially as a first time dog owner, is going to be a struggle. I mean, I adore them. I really do. I'll talk about Sadie, who was a rescue. And my dad had just bought like a small holding. I was about 11. Didn't live with my dad, but he just bought this small holding. He'd been and got a rescue. And she was called Sadie. She was about 18 months old at the time. And she looked like a whippet or skinny, lurchery version of a shepherd at that point. But she was skin and bone. She'd been malnourished. She'd, you know, been neglected in her previous home. And I've worked out since, after she's died, that she was more than likely a German Shepherd cross Malinois, and we were just very lucky with her because she wasn't bitey, or, you know, I never saw that in her. And for the first 6 months, my dad was the only one to feed her, would take her everywhere, and she would only really listen to my dad because that's who fed her. And, you know, they are a loyal breed. I can't, like, shepherds are a very loyal breed, very owner focused and very kind of one people dogs. Another thing that I haven't mentioned about shepherds is they have proper meltdowns. So, for example, if you're at a training class with your shepherd and you need to go to the toilet, you can't take the dog and you leave the shepherd with the trainer or someone else, it's like they're just going to scream because they love you so much and they cannot cope without you. And they are proper, you know, mummy's boys or vice versa. They dote on their owners, and it is, they do tend to be more about one person rather than a family. However, Sadie, so when Sadie came along, there was my little brothers, two of my little brothers, not all three of them at that point, Simon, and there was like, on the land, there is like a bit of the river and it's kind of out of sight, 6 and a bit acres, but it's where the river is. You can't see it from the house. It's like, you know, down the hill and round a corner kind of thing. And we were just trying to sort this place out. It was an absolute, you know, bomb site when they moved in. And all we can hear, you know, Simon were out with us. They were toddlers at this point, and there was only a year between those two. And all can hear is Sadie barking in the, like, and what sounded like miles away. You know, we all kind of looked around. It's like, where's Simon? Where's Simon? Where's Sadie? Oh, we can hear Sadie. Where's Simon? Obviously, it's more worrying when it's a toddler. Yeah, I'm probably about 12, maybe 13 at this point. Don't know. But the boys were very young. And we all go searching, obviously. You know, my dad, my stepmom, me. Because a toddler has gone missing that was out with us seconds before. You know, what we felt like was seconds before while we're weeding and doing stuff like that. And we follow the barking. And Sadie's at the river, which was her favourite place. It's still my favourite place. And she'd literally followed Simon down there and sat next to him and just barked until someone came. I mean, we couldn't have asked for a better dog with a young family. And I'm sure there are many other stories from other people, things like this. Essentially, though, she was kind of herding, like, the family needs to stay together. And the family is not together. I'm going to follow this one and make sure the family come. So we're all together. Well, that was lovely. And, you know, no harm was done. I used to go on, used to have a little farm quad, and used to go on the quad up on the top field and just do some jumps as a teenager. And Sadie used to love chasing, not behind the quad, not in, like, just alongside the quad, like, I suppose herding, really. It all comes back to the herding. She'd always be like next to me when I was on the quad. And my little brother Sam, he'd come up on his little tiny one, and he was about 5 or 6 at this point. And I remember one particular day I went to turn and Sadie didn't. And she ended up under the wheels. And I literally went over her with this heavy farm cord, like dunk, dunk. And, oh, you know, I was, I don't know, 14, 15 at this point. And I didn't know, like, I felt sick. I thought, I've killed the dog. And she got straight up. And I quickly went back down to the house and I was in floods of tears. The dog's going to die. You need to get to the vets. You need to get to the vets. She's got internal bleeding, you know, really flapping. She was absolutely fine. Not a single wrong thing wrong with her. She was always protective of the boys. If my granddad came down and started trying to, you know, like rough play with the boys as you do with little kids and stuff like that, she would get involve herself and warn him off. She was brilliant. Like, I can't tell you a story of a better family dog. And she is probably the reason why I love shepherds so much. While we had Sadie, though, my dad brought home a very tiny black bundle of fluff. And she was called Sally. She was another pedigree German shepherd. She was a black, fully black long coat. And she was just the most adorable little fluffy bear. I think she was brought home about 6 weeks, so, too early. And I absolutely adored her. So I was down there, you know, as much as I could be when she was a puppy. And as she grew, like, Dad didn't put the work in with her. He had with Sadie, and she was kind of just left to her own devices. Well, you know, within reason. I mean, like, training-wise and stuff. But considering there was, like, you know, however many acres that she could just wander, and she was a tiny puppy, she could just wander. And she started to become a little bit naughty, which she would, a young shepherd, under 6 months, and all of that to play in, with no guidance. You know, that's not her fault. And I remember that Sadie wasn't a big fan. She didn't attack her or anything like that, but she just wasn't a fan of this new thing that happened to be there. She was quite used to being an only dog. Sally would follow her because that's what puppies tend to do. Oh, there's another dog, I'll follow you. So Sadie used to take her off the other side of the land, pretty much get her lost, and then come back like, I'm a good girl. The puppy is not. Yeah. They ended up rehoming Sally. There was a story about she went to be a police dog. I'm not sure how, you know, I think it's like the old thing, oh, I went to live on a farm. I'm not sure how true that is, but it broke my heart. And obviously, when you're younger, you don't quite understand that, you know, if a dog's a nightmare and if you haven't got time and it's the best thing for the dog and, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, Sadie died when she was about 9, and I only knew because I was kind of away from the family at that point, you know, teenager, not speaking to anyone, going off and making my own life. But my friend was the veterinary nurse that was there when she was put to sleep. So at least I did know. But I do have pictures of Sadie. She was a cracking, cracking dog. You know, I say this, I love shepherds. I did get bitten by a couple when I was a kid, mainly because I'd been told, you know, don't come any closer because they'll bite. I know, you know, cocky. I know dogs bite. You know, nothing major, like, you know, a nip or a little tiny scratch and things like that from teeth. But yeah. I learned the lesson the hard way, which, yeah, it's going to happen if you ignore people when you say, back off, don't come any closer to the dog. So yeah, there's a bit of a trip down memory lane for you. It also brings me on to with when you get a breed that becomes popular. So my view on with the Daxies, especially smooth-haired Daxies, is they are a victim of their own success with their behaviour and their temperament and health problems. The same rules kind of apply for any other breed that has become popular. So we're seeing a lot more of them. Definitely in Frenchies and Bulldogs and, you know, anything that's fashionable, you tend to find that the health and the temperament goes downhill when they become a popular breed. And for example, Mini Smooths are the most popular Daxie. So you, like, when I first met Daxies, when I was like a teenager, or I don't know, around the age of 10, you didn't have that snappy, or the ones I came across anyway, they weren't snappy, they weren't barky. I mean, not all of them are now, but it's commonplace. Like, you could pretty much say, like I say to people when they say, oh, I've got Daxie, and they know that I've got Daxie, and I'm like, are they a barky twat? And then laugh, because it's a given. That's their breeding and their purpose, what they were bred for. But it's been turned up a few notches with not the right selective breeding, in my view. The more a breed becomes popular, the more people who aren't, you know, people who just want to make money, kind of see an opportunity. And a lot of this happened during COVID as well, not just with this breed, but with any breed, really. They jump on the bandwagon of an opportunity to make money. There's a breed I know I can sell puppies, I can make money. I'll put my dog and, you know, neighbor's dog or dog down the road or friend's dog together, no health tests, and we'll make a shit ton of money. Yay! No. And that's, you know, with no thought to, never mind the health, but the temperament. And then you end up with barky, ill, or, you know, unhealthy puppies, or puppies that then develop into dogs with behavior problems and health problems, which then become bred from. And, you know, the vicious cycle goes on. And this tends to be what happens. And it's such a shame. I know there's talk at the minute about bringing in a dog license again. I don't think it can do any harm. However, who's going to police it? Where's the funds and the resources to be able to police whether you've got a license or not? And in my view, that like anyone who gets a dog should have to go and do a course, or should go like before they get the dog, they should know about dog body language. They don't need to be an expert, but they should know the basics. And there are so many people out there that don't know the basics. And that's what makes me sad. And, you know, and looking into what breeds are right for them, and that it's not just on how they look. Backyard breeding and money for puppies has a lot to answer for, in my view. The late John Rogerson said many times that if you made every dog or every puppy 50 quid, you wouldn't get backyard breeders and you wouldn't have this problem. And I think that is a very fair point, as in, I mean, it costs more than 50 quid to raise a puppy. I understand that. But let's just think about this for a second. If there wasn't money to be made out of breeding, a lot less people would do it. So you'd end up with the right people who are doing it for the love of the breed, and only those that breed, because no dog is worth more than 50 quid. There's no incentive other than the love of the breed and the love of rearing puppies and things like that. There, you know, you're not getting any monetary value. I'm not saying that there are people out there who are excellent breeders and do make money out of it. I'm not saying that's a wrong thing. What I'm saying is it's wrong that it's too accessible for people to just breed for the hell of it. Because they think their dog's all right, and you know, next door's dog's the same breed, and why not? Because it'll be fun. There's way too many risks, and that's how we end up with these dogs that are causing problems and that are, you know, being like creating nightmare lives for their owners as much as theirs, and are not happy because nobody understands them. And it's just a very sad state of affairs. And yeah, that's my view. I agree with John Rogerson that if every puppy was 50 quid, we wouldn't have these problems. Whether it was your like best bred bulldog, or whether it like the thousands, which I think is ridiculous, but or whether it's, you know, a little mongrel, you know, an old school little mongrel, they should all be the same price. At the end of the day, they're all lives. They're all individuals. Making one worth more money than another isn't right, in my view. And I think we'd have less in rescue. Like, I'm not sure rescues would properly exist if we went down that road, because there'd be enough foster homes that could, you know, temporarily have one until a home is found. You wouldn't have thousands of kennels full of dogs because, yeah. Anyway, that's my thoughts of the day, my ramblings. And I hope you have all had a fabulous Easter weekend. I'm recording this just before Easter weekend. I'm going man trailing. I'm going swimming with the dogs. I've got loads planned, and I'm really looking forward to it. Whatever you did at Easter weekend, I hope some of it involved chilling and laughing. You know, that's the priorities, really, and spending time with your dogs and your loved ones. Yeah. I will be back again next week, and I have a great subject to share with you if I haven't got a guest, which maybe, yeah, I've got some juicy stuff to share with you. But anyway, have a good week. I'll be back soon. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.